And please help me welcome our speaker tonight. Our speaker tonight is Graham C. from the Pendel Serenity Group.
My name is Graham. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Hi. They made me wear a tie. It's a miracle I have a tie today. Very cool. Alcoholics Anonymous. He told me 5 years ago that when I first walked into AA that I would just drive up to Quakertown and stand up in front of a million people I don't know and tell you all about my sordid life, I probably would have left. And then come back because, seriously, they said you have an hour. I was like, really? An hour? That's great. There's never enough time. I love to speak. I love it. I absolutely love it. And if people ask me, I'm like, yes, of course I will. I'm still suffering from a massive ego. I love to hear my voice. I love to tell my story. I think stories are absolutely essential in Alcoholics Anonymous. The power of storytelling, that we tapped into it. Bill knew there was something about telling another alcoholic your life. I don't know exactly what it is. I'm not sure how it works, but something about telling stories, just something works. When I came in, a guy started talking. He was telling his story. And he wasn't selling me anything, you know. He was just talking. And he was telling me what happened. He told me his experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, he was talking to the whole group, but he was talking to me. I felt it. I knew he was. Plus, you had all said it. I was the most important person in the room, and I believed you. I was like, finally, people who get it. And it was scary, you know, that first day. we'll let it pass to the back. the first meeting was scary. I was absolutely terrified. And I walked in, and you know, I'm sitting in the parking lot doing the, oh my God, I'm sitting there, am I going to go in an AA? I'm going to go out, I can't believe it. And I got up, and something made me walk in the room, and I listened, and I heard some things. I heard come back, I heard, once I start drinking, I can't stop, and I can't stop starting. And I was like, wow. That guy just said everything that's in my head in a sentence. It was like, he's like Buddha. I want to tackle him after the meeting and ask him. I was like, what? Could you say that 5 more times or write it down or something? A guy came up to me after the meeting, and oh, he was a ball of fire. Larry A. I love him. I love him to death. He's just a ball. He's like, this is amazing way of life. This is unbelievable. It's gonna light you up. You're going to have spiritual weight. You got to come back tomorrow. It's amazing. This thing's changed my life. It's amazing. I was like, dude, that's great for you. Maybe you could go blow up somewhere right now. I don't feel your vibe, man. I'm 24 hours off the, you know, porcelain throne. I'm like, dude, I'm not really feeling it. I was like, and don't hug me, you know. I was like, I'm seeing everybody around and like, just step back. So I've got an hour. Let's go back to the beginning. Let's see. My very first memory. Seriously. My very first memory. And I think I make this up, some of it. but it's as far back as I go, and Mom kind of has filled in some of the gaps. It's beautiful, okay? I'm at the top of the stairs, and I'm on one side of my mom, and my brother's on the other side. And at the bottom, everybody's crying. And she's in this white dress, and at the bottom of the stairs is this guy who was my father. But he doesn't look like him anymore. He's like this monster. He's contorted. And he's just evil that's coming out of him. And all I know is there's some kind of fear. Something's not right. Something's wrong. Cry, cry, cry. I don't know how accurate that is, if the stairs were there, or if the mom had the white dress, or anything like that. But the feeling was, this guy who I trusted, I loved, was a monster now. And he was jetting. And he did. He left. It took me a while to realize that he maybe was doing me a favor. It actually took me a fourth and fifth step, having written that down, and then have another guy say, hey, did you ever think maybe his leaving was a good thing? Because up until I was like 30 years old and I had done that fifth step, I was running around with a 4-year-old's feelings. That's it. I had a 3-4-year-old emotion about it, and that's what I was walking around with for my whole life until somebody finally pointed it out and said, look, you wrote it down. It's right here. The fact is, maybe he did a good thing there. So I felt less than immediately, right out of the gates. Daddy left. And he tried to make appearances in my life. The welfare checks would come, or what was it, the alimony checks. That was it. Every once in a while, he was like making an effort. Every once in a while, it would be like, out of nowhere, Mom would say, "Well, he's sending checks again." And looking back now, I'm thinking maybe he had these moments of sobriety where all of a sudden it was like, "Hey, I got to make amends and I have to do something." Last I heard, he was in a shelter in Buffalo, dying. I don't know. I talked to him when I was 25. Last time I talked to him, and he said, "I'm an alcoholic, and you might be too. I hear it's genetic." And I was like, "Yeah, right." Click. And I went and drank a bottle of wine to show him I'm not an alcoholic. I'll show him. Tell me I'm gonna go to one of my ex-wives and said, "Listen to what he said." So I'm growing up, right? Sort of. And I decide my parents they moved to this they called it a mobile home near the trailer, and it was clean, it was nice, it was nice. As I grew up, and literally, in the sticks, serious, where New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania all come together up there, right? There's this little town just south of Narrowsburg called Honesdale, and it's near Lake Wallenpaupack. I mean, it sticks. If you've been up there, there's nothing. And I lived in the sticks. Like, my grandparents owned a campground. Talk about isolation. It was perfect for me. My grandparents owned a campground, and we lived at the dead end, at the top of the hill of the campground. So, if I ever had children, I could always say, I had to walk downhill in the winter, backwards in the snow. I literally did, like a mile. In this trailer I grew up, too. And Dad didn't make a lot of money. And seriously, we didn't eat some nights. So, and a lot of the people in town where I was going to school, they all dressed nice. I was immediately like, I'm such a piece of, I'm terrible. I'm nothing. I'm no good. And so I'm growing up in this, and I'm seeing all this going on around me. I'm seeing my parents. I'm watching my father slowly. Mom was real good at picking out guys. She's this cat. He's slowly descending into alcoholism. I'm watching this, and I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm going to do the opposite of everything they're doing. It was the George Costanza plan for living. If you ever saw that Seinfeld, where George is going to do the opposite of everything that he's ever done in his life. He has a decision he's going to make. He decides to do the opposite. So I saw my parents, and I was like, well, they're teaching me pretty well here. This is good. All I have to do is exactly the opposite of what they're doing. So I definitely wasn't going to drink. Drinking wasn't in the cards. I was going to go to school. This is when perfectionism kicked in. Big time. I was going to totally overcompensate for feeling miserably low. Problem was, I wasn't very good in school. So as hard as I tried, I just was like a B student, C's and B's. But I did get to be class president, right? All right? And I never drank, and I was holier than thou. I wasn't religious, though. I should touch on that real quick. See, I did know my real father a little bit, a little bit in the beginning. And he would take me around to his parents, my grandparents, and they were like these crazed Bible beaters. They were amazing. I go over to the house, and they had Jesus stuff everywhere. It was amazing. And they had the Bible, and I'm like 3-4 years old, and I'm reading, like, the first paragraph of it. And they're so excited. I'm like, yes! And I'm feeling all this love and everything. And then he leaves, right? And I'm thinking, well, that's definitely weird. That doesn't feel right, in my 4-year-old mind. And then my grandparents get up, and they go to do missionary work over in Korea. So now I'm thinking, whoa. What's up, God? What's up, So here's my 4-5-year-old little mind going, hey, I'm equating these people with God. This is my problem. And I tended to do that quite a bit. I made people my higher power my whole life. And all my little brain could think of was, God bailed on me. Well, I don't need God. And my mom and dad, certainly, they weren't raising me in any religion. They did baptize me for some reason. I think they were superstitious. Just in case. You know, we were the just in case religion. It was like, I know we die, so. I remember being jealous of the neighbors too, because they were going to CCD and everything, and I was like, man, they got something up on me. They're gonna get, you know, like that was it. But in the end, what it turned out to be was I got kind of very anti-religion. I got really against it. I got to pretty liberal college, and I found a lot of people who thought like I thought too, especially on that subject. And I was like, yeah, whatever God is, I don't know. Don't shove it down my throat. I want nothing to do with it. To be continued on that. It comes back to that. So anyway, I'm 18 years old and I haven't had a drink yet. I'm being good. Maybe I had a little sip of Dad's little ponies there every once in a while, you know, and it's summer and we're out working or something. But nothing hit me, you know. And it's New Year's Eve and I'm home from college. And no, it wasn't home from college. It was New Year's Eve. It was right before I went to college. Me and my buddy Dan Wilson. And I'm like, dude, let's get drunk. That's it. No party, no nothing. No, you know, let's just do it. Let's get drunk. All right, it's New Year's Eve. It'll be fun. So he brings over these Jack Daniel's wine coolers. And I drank like one, like a sip of one. And it was horrible. So I went right to Dad's beer, because I wasn't drinking for taste. Like, right out of the gates, it was a fact. I wanted to see what it would do, right? I didn't really care what it tasted like. It wasn't a social thing. There were no people. It was me and Dan Wilson, you know, and my dog. And we didn't even have cable. I mean, we had an antenna on the trailer. I remember Footloose was on. But so I go to Dad's beer, and I want to see what this gun do, you know? I want to know. Well, I found out. About halfway through my second beer, it happened. That thing happened, and it was glorious. It was my first spiritual experience. Everything that was going on inside my brain, all the self, I was out of it. I was out of myself. It was wonderful. I had no idea. I didn't even know that I was chained to myself that badly. I had no clue until it was off. And I was like, this is amazing. I was lighter, you know, skipping. Oh, this is great. Let's have more. And then it was on. I remember, I don't know how much I drank that night. It was enough to get sick on and to pass out on and to wake up the next morning and say, I'm never doing that again. My head was just throbbing and throbbing and throbbing. And, I was pretty sure that was it for me as far as drinking went. I was like, it was really a good time, but that hangover was horrible. Who would put themselves through that, right? A week later, I put myself through that again. I could not recall with sufficient force the pain of of that drink from just a week ago, or any of the pain it created, or any of the hangover. There was no force. There was no fight. Somebody said, party at the lake. I said, sure, sounds great. I never thought of any consequences. I just drank again. And I didn't move into the gutter. Like, it wasn't like the next day. I'm a bum. Hey, yahoo. I had my Costanza plan. I was going to college. So I took off there. And frat parties started, and good things like that started. And I thought I was cool because I was keeping vodka in the dorm room. We're not supposed to have it in there. And I'm not really drinking on regular basis yet. I'm drinking, once a week. Once a week. Sometimes I'd skip a weekend and not drink. What I didn't notice, what was happening to me was that the times in between getting wasted were slowly coming together. Slowly coming together. It was like, I first started and it was like, okay, once a month, you know, or once every 3 months. And then slowly it became, okay, once a week. okay, once every 4 days, okay, once every 3 days, okay, once every 2 days, and then maybe every day. And it was so imperceptible. It happened over about a 3 or 4 year period. It's like watching hair grow. You don't see it. It's completely imperceptible. It just slowly snuck up on me. Next thing I know, I'm drinking every day, and I'm thinking it's totally normal. It's fine, you know? Because what I had done while I'm learning how to drink every day is I started surrounding my people with people who drank every day. Started hanging out in places where that was totally acceptable. I found out the restaurant business is really great. It's so much fun. I remember I got my first job at a restaurant, and we were putting the restaurant together. We were building it up and everything, and we were driving back from shellacking chairs, and I just pounded a six-pack, and I'm driving going, this is great. I'm going to be in the restaurant business for the rest of my life. And as a sophomore in college, I was getting okay grades, you know. I dropped out. I did. I dropped out. I started working in restaurants. Not that it was great money, but my motive behind it was clearly not, you know, it wasn't money, it wasn't to make a living, it certainly wasn't service. I couldn't stand the customers. Oh my God. That was the worst part of the whole thing. There's a philosopher, forget his name, he says, hell is other people. I was learning that very quickly. And they realized he shouldn't be waiting tables. They're like, put him in the back and have him make pizzas or something. And I remember that little ticker would go off with a, look at that, I got a little guy on me. What is that? A little bug. Yeah. A little sober bug. You're doing good, buddy. Keep coming back. Get off my hand. That's going to be very confusing on the CD later when someone's listening to it. There was a bug. There was a bug on my hand, CD listener. I rescued it, I think. Watch where you're walking. What was I talking about? Oh, they put me in the back of the pizzas. So I'm in the back of the pizzas, and you know the ticker? It's telling me orders are coming up. Oh, man, one day that thing went across the dining room. It was amazing. I threw pizzas at people. I mean, it was not safe. I was restless, irritable, and discontented. I could not live in my own skin already. And I was 22. And already I'm going crazy. And I don't know what it is. I just think it's, you know, maybe I shouldn't be in the restaurant business. So I go back to school. And I found another higher power, this woman. She was great. She drank like I drank. She was a great drinking buddy. I was like, this is perfect. I think we were going out 3 months, you know. I moved in like immediately. I love the joke. How do you know two alcoholics are dating? There's a moving truck out front. I was in immediately, you know. Like, let's move in together. Let's get married. Yahoo! I don't remember the wedding. There's some pictures somewhere. That might not be true. Those pictures are probably gone. But I honestly, she was something. We had a pretty interesting run. We worked the restaurant business, and I had this great idea. I was gonna play music because I saw the guy who was doing the music, and I noticed that was so much easier than what I was doing. I'm like, I want to do that. I can play some chords, you know. I got a guitar, so I went up. I asked him. I was like, dude, how do you get into this stuff? And he gave me some hints and some pointers. So I got a gig, and I started playing a little bit. And I told the girl, I was like, my wife. I was like, I'm gonna be famous. I'm gonna write some songs. It's kind of embarrassing. So I started playing out in bars, and I started making money at it, some money. But she wasn't into it, you know. She couldn't keep up with it or something. So we had to move. And wherever she was going, I had to follow. So we moved down the shore for a little while, And I started looking for gigs down there, but I ended up working on a golf course. The whole time I'm just drinking like crazy, every day, all day. It's great. Golf course work was great too, by the way. a lot of alone time on the golf course. So we're down there, and one day, and I kind of am starting to get the sense that our relation ain't working really good. It's not, things aren't going well. She wants to keep going out at night, and I'm perfectly content to stay home and just get wasted. As a matter of fact, I was starting to get to the point where if I was out at a place, it could be this full, and there was nobody there. I was starting to get into this I'm all by myself mode. I'm slowly receding into my head, more and more and more. More me, you know. My cage is getting smaller and smaller. And I remember being at a place, and I'm at the shore in the middle of the summer, and it's this karaoke thing. The guy's going around with a microphone, yeah, rocking and everything, and I'm just out of care, you know, sitting there. I'm looking around at all these people like, you know. And the guy's all rocking, and he comes up to me with a microphone. He goes, I'm like, get that out of my face. And everyone's like, asshole, isn't it? I was like, you know. But I wasn't staying out late with her anymore, and she wasn't digging that. And honestly, there could have been another guy. There could have been several other guys. I don't know. I was not present. I wasn't there for that relationship at all. I have no clue. I have no idea what really went down. And I've yet to have a chance to make amends to her. I've tried several times to get in contact with her. I've contacted lots of her family. I got to make excuses here. Listen to me. I'm, really, I'm trying. But she said, you have to go now, one morning. And I was like, oh, so full of self-pity. I'm like, no, I don't. You know, I'm begging. I'm like, I can't go. I'm in the shower with a Bic razor. I had some really, really smooth wrists. But it was so pathetic. Yeah, and it's really sad. I mean, the thought of suicide is there. But it's so weak and so pathetic that I know I'm not really going to do it. But I'm like, I'm doing this show for me in the shower. You know, no one's there. I'm just, so I leave. I left. I packed up my one bag and my guitar, and I took the car, and I remember buying a pack of cigarettes on the way. I don't smoke. I thought that's what you do, right? I don't know. So I leave. I go home to mom. Of course, what's a good alcoholic do? I go home to mom. And I dry out there for a couple weeks. I remember thinking, maybe I just need to dry out a little bit. And I did. And, I think as the same philosopher said, if you think you're so enlightened, go spend a week with your parents. And I wasn't enlightened at all. And I'm there for 2 weeks, and I'm losing it. So I'm on the phone with my brother. He's like, just come down. I got a place. So I get down to his place. It's the basement of this condemned house, right? He's got electricity wired in from the street. I'm like, that's genius. We don't have to pay for this? I'm like, yeah, this is amazing. He's got the electricity wired in. this is great. I don't have to pay rent. I go downstairs, and we're living on a concrete slab. It's great. I got a mattress with this thin. I'm sleeping on the floor. Spiders are crawling all over me in the morning. But I get up, I have my booze, and I'm fine. Everything's fine. I'm not working. I'm not doing anything. I'm like, I'm getting over my nervous breakdown. And my brother's cool with it. He's like, that's fine. We got to get you to work at some point. But, yeah, you know, take it easy. At some point, 9/11 happened in there. I remember that day. It was strange. I something happened. They told me like 6 months later. I wasn't there. I was losing it. And then me and my brother got out of the condemned house with the spiders. We moved to another apartment where my next higher power lived. She lived upstairs. She she was a codependent. Oh my God. Wow, just beautiful, absolutely beautiful. If I knew what one was, and if I was shopping for one, I mean, we're talking, yeah. Blue light special. I was psyched. I she took me in like a lost puppy. You know, I was hurting, but I could drink the way I wanted to drink, and, you know, there were nights where She told me this secondhand. She was like, last night. Do you remember anything? I go, I drank a lot. Yeah, I'm sorry. I know I drank a lot. And she goes, yeah, you drank a lot. You're in the closet. You don't nothing. Closet. And then I start picturing it a little bit. Those fuzzy pictures. Yeah, you're in the closet. You had a boot and a flip flop, and you were naked. I said, "What are you doing?" You said, "I'm making sandwiches." I said, "That's not how you make sandwiches." You said, "Good to know." This wasn't on New Year's Eve, okay? This wasn't on, like, somebody's birthday. This was a Tuesday. Yeah, this was the middle of, it could have been any day. This wasn't, like, something special. I'm in the bathroom making sandwiches, or the closet with footwear. So, so she was great. So obviously we got married. Now at this point, we're hanging out a lot, and I'm playing, I'm making some money playing gigs, and every night I'm going to these places, and I'm hanging out with my brother too, because we kind of live in the same area, and drinking as much as humanly possible at this point. I'm drinking every day, all the time. I'm shaking like a leaf. I don't know what it is. I think it's nerves. I know the alcohol helps. One day, after like a week, 2 week long bender, I get in the car with this girl, and we're driving back from shopping, you know, bologna, cheese, more alcohol, and I checked out. I just wasn't there. I was gone. And when I came to, I realized I'm operating a motor vehicle, and then I realized I can't feel my arms, I can't feel my head, I can't feel my face, I can't feel anything. Slowly the feeling started to come back, little tingles here and there, and then I realized I wasn't breathing, and I flipped out. I lost it. And somehow I got the car over to the side of the road. I was like, get me to a hospital. And we switched seats really fast, and she's driving me to the hospital. And my chest feels like, somebody described a panic attack, and they said it's like there's a vulture sitting on your chest just waiting to eat you. And I was like, oh, wow, that's it. The thought going through my head was, I'm going to die. That was it. I was sure I was going to die. So we're pulling up on the on-ramp there to Doylestown, to go to Doylestown Hospital. And clearest day. It was this beautiful day. The sun setting. It's like a movie. I'm dying. This is what I'm thinking. I'm dying. And there's the sun going down. And it was perfect. And going to the hospital, this is it. This is the big one, you know? and this thought goes through my head. It's the first time I ever put these three things together in my life. I thought, I don't know where it came from, but I believe this was the beginning. This is where it started. I thought, God, if you let me live, I'll quit drinking. And I was like, what the hell was that? But it was the first time I ever put those three things together. God, drinking, and dying. Those things had never been all jumbled in one thought in my head ever. And I got to the hospital. The guy took me in the back, you know. First of all, they made me wait forever, you know. They checked everything, and he's like, hey, he's not having it. He's fine. And then this one guy took me back to a special room. It wasn't like a hospital room. It was like a library. And he sits me down, and he looks at me, and he goes, how much do you drink? And I was like, what does that have to do with anything? And I wasn't honest with him. So he didn't give me the good medicine. I had to find another doctor later to do that. And that doctor did give me the good medicine. And that allowed me to drink, really, a lot more, actually. It calmed the panic attacks. And I started drinking again in full force. Now, I'm about a month pounding the bottle here. And it dawns on me. I don't know, another little moment of sanity. Somebody's knocking at my door, right? Says, hey, remember that thing? You made a promise remember when you were dying and you said, God, if you quit drinking? It's like, ooh, yeah, yeah. And I remember, well, you know, Mom taught me, well, just in case, I'll quit drinking. All right, sounds great. I'm done. So, you know, I figured, and I thought this would help the relationship, too. I told her, you know, you're going to love this, sweetheart. This is wonderful. I'm going to quit drinking. I'm going to clean up. And she's like, yeah. It was the worst 22 days of my life, by far. It was absolutely horrible. I white-knuckled it the whole time, and when I picked up that drink, I don't remember picking it up. Mental blank spot. I checked out. Wasn't there. I vaguely remember being at the counter with some beer, and then I was drunk. And that really scared me the next day a little bit. And the next year, the next whole year, became this experiment. It became a total experiment of, can I quit drinking? This is weird. And a lot of the experiment was like this. My main source of income was playing music. So I'd be going into a bar down in Northeast Philly or down in Buckingham. I play down there. Shameless plug. And I'd be walking into a bar. I'd have my equipment. I'd be walking in. And my uncle is a musician. He's been a professional musician his whole life. And he always said, you're not working. You're not drinking, you're working. You're not drinking, you're working. And that's my mantra, you know. I'm walking in there with my stuff. I'm working. I'm not drinking. 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 Working. Not drinking. You can have one. I'm not drinking. And I'd be like, oh. And I'd be like, yeah, you know, I could have one, right? Right? Just like that. Is that subtle? And then I'd be like, oh, maybe not. No, no, I'm not drinking. And then the lies would start to kick in. And then my mind would be like, well, you know, just one to loosen up because, you know, you got to set all your equipment up. It'd be nice to be nice and loose for the first song. You don't want to be all tense and nervous. And besides, you know, the bartender, he's a great guy. You know, he knows what beer you like. He's going to put it up on the counter anyway. So what are you going to do? Say no? That's retarded. You're not going to do that. Just drink the beer. You can have one. You're just going to have one. And be like, okay, all right, one. You know, and it'd be amazing. I mean, every time I got drunk, it's because I believed something that wasn't true. It's that simple. It's that simple. It really is. So I'm sitting here believing something that's completely not true. I can have only one. So I go up and I have the one, and it's like, okay, I can have four, but I'm going to have them here, 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 and here. And I'll have one at this break, and then one right before I leave because, you know, the drive home. I want to make sure I've got some little, but just for the ride home, it'd be great. I have the second one. Okay, six, but no shots. And then it'll be good. I have the third one, and he'll be like, okay, one shot, because he's buying. And he's a great guy. I love you. And I'd have the one shot, and it was over. It was over. And this happened every single time. It wasn't like once in a while. Every gig, I walked in with that mantra in my head, I'm not drinking, I'm working, I'm not drinking, I'm working. And every morning I woke up, and I'd say, how? I wake up with little sweaters on my teeth. Freaking, what's going on? It's nuts. I was losing it. And it's getting worse, and it's getting worse, and it's getting worse. I'm waking up in ditches. I'm dodging telephone poles. I'm losing my mind. The worst part is the fear. I keep waking up with this dread and this fear. I'm not going to drink, and then I drink. And this lady, she said, that's it. She was done being a codependent. She's like, I'm done. This job description sucks. I'm done with you. You're out. And I'm like, this is starting to sound familiar. It's great. So I said, all right, look, I'll do anything. I've been trying to quit. I got honest for a second. I was like, she said, you have to quit drinking. And I said, I don't think I can. The first time, I was like, wow. I said it out loud. She said, well, you better think of something. So I was like, all right, I'll try this AA thing. I had to see therapists in order to get the medication I needed. So these therapists were constantly saying, you can just sit in the back. You don't have to, just sit in the back. Just don't raise it. So I walked into a meeting. I went down to Pendel Serenity, down to Pendel. It's a Monday through Friday, 12 noon meeting. Perfect for a musician. Unemployed. I walked in and I said, I didn't say anything. I sat in the back, just like they sat. I was terrified, you know. I listened a little bit. That guy said, once I start, I can't stop, and I can't stop starting. I was like, whoa. The guy after the meeting came up to me. I was like, blow up and don't hug me. And for some reason, I came back the next day because I remember leaving the meeting thinking something was really cool about those people. There was something there. There's something. I had no idea what it was. But it was like tonight. You keep hearing it, a little laughter, laughing at this. You know, when I'm living through this stuff, it hurt like hell. But here we are, like, there's sandwiches in the closet. That's a good story. That's not one of the really bad. And here I'm in, like, the worst pain of my life. And I'm hearing people, like, in this joy and this feeling. I'm like, that's intense. And I'm like, if they can take that crap and they can turn it around like that. And I was in the storytelling. That's what I was noticing. It was all in this way that people are telling stories. And they're taking it and they're flipping all this pain. They're taking this pain and they're making it into something. I didn't know what, but I liked it. I was attracted to it. It was something that I'd always wanted in my life. Something I was always missing. I remember wanting to start a cult. I was drunk one night. I was like, maybe a cult would be it, you know? But so I couldn't find the leader when I came in here, though. I was looking. So I kept coming back. And I kept seeing the signs on the wall, you know, the window shades. And the 12 traditions and the 12 steps. And I was like, okay, there's 24 of these things. And people are talking about steps. And some people are saying, just don't drink, go to meetings. Just don't drink, go to meetings. And, so, and those people are saying things like people, place, and things. And I was like, hey, I'm a musician. I can't do people, place, and things. I was like, I'm in trouble. I don't know what to do. I was going to gigs, white-knuckling it, freaking out, going out of my head. I'd be on the phone. I'd be like, they'd be like, get out of there. What are you doing? Get out of there. And that was their best advice. I'd stay, and I didn't drink. I just white-knuckled it. I remember I pulled a guy aside after the meeting. I was like, dude, how long do these steps take? I need them by Friday. I got a gig, He said, how long do you want to be sick for? I was like, whoa. And he said, look, you have a disease. And I was like, okay, go on. I was very interested in the steps really quick because I could tell people, there were people who had something, and I wanted that. And they seemed to be the people who were talking about working these 12 steps. And this was one of the guys I pulled aside after the meeting. He said, yeah. He goes, you got a disease. It's like an allergy. Once you take a drink, you can't stop taking drinks. I was like, yeah. I got that much. He goes, well, that's powerlessness. That's what you're powerless over. And I said, what's the unmanageable part? And he's smiling. He's going, he's asking good questions. He goes, unmanageable, it means basically that, you know, when you get up in the morning, are you planning your drink? Who's managing your life? Who's your manager? And it didn't take me long to figure out my manager was alcohol, clearly. And I woke up in the morning, and I was planning a drink. I was thinking, okay, I thought if I made it to 4 o'clock, I wasn't an alcoholic, right? So that's planning a drink. And slowly, the drunken life for me became reality. And as that became reality, everything else in my life started to just unravel. And it was the feelings and emotions inside that I couldn't manage. And then he said, what you need is a new manager. You're powerless, so you need a new manager that's really powerful. Would you like that? And I go, you're talking about God. I'm like, you dog, you. I'm like, I love Sandy Beach. If anybody's ever heard Sandy Beach, he goes, you can talk to the alcoholic. This is great. You go, it's like, let's make a deal. Okay, in door number one, you've got alcoholic death. All right? Yeah. Alcoholic death. You die in your own vomit. Your liver explodes. Hey, you could cross the median and kill a family of 20. Wouldn't that be great? Or you could die alone. That'd be great. Or, hey, you could live. How about that? Wouldn't that be wonderful? Live in your hell. Or, spiritual solution. How bad is that alcoholic death again? Could you... How bad, really? Seriously. That's how I was when I came in. God was like, you know, I had a resentment, and a bad resentment against God. He said, you don't have to, AA says you don't have to believe in anything. You just have to believe you need to believe. I was like, that's weird, but I'll try it. And he said, just be willing. You just need a little bit of willingness. I didn't really get the sanity part for a while. That took me some time. But it was explained to me that alcoholic insanity, for me, isn't like, you know, running down the street and throwing rocks in windows and a big diaper. some nights it was, but for the most part, Alcoholic Insanity was more like this. It was, hey, I got 10 million reasons not to drink over here. Let's see. I could hurt somebody. I could hurt myself. How about this one? This is my favorite. I never stop once I start. That's a great reason not to drink. I could kill somebody. I got a million reasons not to drink. The hangover. Money. I got to just keep going. And one reason, one very, very, very stupid reason to drink. It's Wednesday. And the really stupid reason beats all the really good reasons every single time. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. And I always chose the really dumb reason. It's Tuesday, you know. The soccer game's on. I hate soccer. sorry, soccer people. Anyway, so so I'm coming around a little bit, and this guy's got me doing the third step prayer. Got to offer myself to Jesus. You know, I'm doing this every morning, and I'm starting to kind of have I'm okay a little bit, but I'm about 4 or 5 weeks sober, and I'm looking at. I'm looking at 4 o'clock coming, and it's one of those mornings where I wake up. You know those days when you wake up and you're kind of you haven't really checked in yet, and it's all they're already on the Showcase Showdown, on it's like, oh damn, I have to eat at some point. I'm like, I'm certainly not dressed like this. I'm hurting, you know, and I'm like 4 or 5 weeks sober. And I'm thinking, so I'm lingering around the house, and 4 o'clock is just a coming. It's just coming. I didn't go to a meeting that day. I didn't pray that day. I didn't do anything that day. I stopped watching TV for a second, and my brain turned on. And went, with the, you know, the banana tree of monkeys up there. And I'm thinking, there's going to be a lot of fun noises on this CD, too. And I'm thinking, Okay, I gotta get through. Just get through this. And 4 o'clock, and the clock's like, durr, and all I'm doing is watching the clock, you know? Like, insane. And I start thinking, okay, what are these crazy AA people tell me to do? I gotta think of something. I gotta do. What do they tell me to do? And they said, do something different, anything. So I was like, oh, well, okay, what could I do? I could shower. So I get in the shower, and I'm taking a shower, and I'm washing, you know, the buttons. I'm like, nothing's working. And I'm thinking, what else? And I remember somebody said, pray. And I wasn't doing the third step prayer yet, because I wasn't doing any prayer yet. At this point, I'm holding hands at the end of the meeting, lip syncing the Our Father. You know, I knew there was a beat to it, but I couldn't catch the lyrics. But so I'm hanging on, and I remember these guys said pray. So I didn't have any prayers. I was just really scared, and I said help. And a voice came in my head. It was clear as day. Sounded like my ex-wife. Said, go make the bed. I was like, go make the bed, sure. It's 4 now. I'll make the bed. Yeah, that's great. I'll do that. Yeah, make the bed. I get out, I dry off. I go to make the bed, I pull my sheets back, and my 24-hour coin came flying out. Came flying out of the sheets. And I was like, the lawyer woke up in my head and was like, whoa, you went to bed with it last night. It was in your pocket. It fell out. You know, it was like, don't look at any more into this. This was just, you know, he had charts. You know, he's like, look over here. Don't worry. But it was way too late. It was way too late. Because I already felt it. See, something happened inside of me that my brain had no argument against. What I felt was, and the only way to put it in words was, God told me to go find my coin. And what's amazing is I was 3 years sober before I realized what the true miracle there was. And I thought, I'm 3 years sober, and I'm thinking the miracle was the coin came flying out of the sheets. It's no. The miracle was I stopped obsessing about a drink right there. The obsession was gone. I didn't even think about it. I just sat there and cried, holding this coin. And I called somebody, and I went, yeah, I can't believe it. They're like, you have to share that. That's amazing. You'd think I would have jumped right into the steps, right? I'm so defiant. So I'm going on 6 months sober. I'm doing 1, 2, 3. My sponsor's egging me on, going, you said you'd turn your will and your life over to a higher power, right? Did you make that decision? Did you do that? I was like, every morning. I do it every morning. And he said, really? Really? He said, I don't know. It's just silly me. I thought God maybe had his will was possibly a 12-step program, not a 3-step program. I was like, oh, okay. I get it. But I was still, I still wanted a lot of my will. I was still very defiant. So one day I'm moving from Solbury down to Morrisville, and it's the last run, you know. I've got the car packed. I'm moving down to Solbury, and I'm like, or down to Morrisville, and I'm all like, ugh. And I think I can eat at this place. Here's the mind again, playing chess. It goes, you can go in there and have a burger. You can just sit in there and have a burger. You've been playing gigs now for 6 months in bars. You're doing the third step prayer. You're fine. You're great. You can do it. You don't need, it's fine. Just go in and have a burger and have a soda. I'm like, yeah, I can do that. So I go in. I sit down. I don't want to bother. You don't want to bother a waitress, right? Don't bother a waitress. Besides, you know the bartender. He'll give you a cut on everything. Just sit at the bar. Just like that. Just like that. My brain had my body at the bar. Just like that. And I'm in AA 6 months, working 3 steps. Just like that, I'm at the bar. No problem. I have the burger with the soda. No problem. I'm fine, right? So my bartender comes out to me. He goes, hey, we got this new microbrew. It's like from, I don't know, from Canada or something. It's like top secret. We had to smuggle it in under like Subways. It's absolutely amazing. It's made of cranberries and fruit juice, and it's unbelievable. Elm trees, they soaked it. It's an amazing thing. Hold on. And before I can say anything, he's gone. And he comes back with a little Dixie cup this big, and he puts it in front of me and walks away. And it's me and a Dixie cup at the bar. Right? When I came to, it happened just like it said in the book. Mental blank spot. I wasn't there. When I came to, when something woke me up, my hand was in the claw position like that. I wasn't that close to it yet, but it was like that, and I melted. I believe I really took step one right there. It was over. The gig was up. I was like, you dirty brain. I realized that there was something living in my skull that was not me, that was something else, and it wanted alcohol, and it was going to figure out a way to get it. I got into the steps really quick. I didn't drink that drink. I shared it at meetings, and people's, oh, boy, did they get on me on that. I was like, but I didn't drink it. They're like, argh. And I was like, it's cool. I'm doing a 4-step. Leave me alone. Did a 4th and 5th step, and I did the program of action now. You know, 1, 2, and 3 is one thing, but the program of action is where it's at. I got 3 relationships in my life. I got a relationship with myself, I got a relationship with God, and I got a relationship with you people. 4 and 5 was me. Repair the relationship with me. 6 and 7, I learned some about humility, and I fixed the relationship with my higher power. And 8 and 9, I go out and I fix the relationship with other people. 10, 11, and 12, I live in the solution. 10, I constantly am working on inventory and stuff. And when I'm wrong, not if, unfortunately, I promptly admit it. Promptly, such a relative word. I love it. Your promptly, is it like my promptly or like 11, I continue to prayer and meditation because, you know, if this higher power restores me to sanity, I better talk to it, I better listen to it, I better try and figure out what it is. It's amazing that I have a concept of a higher power at all. That's ridiculous. I came in here totally, I was getting around that. I saw God, I saw a higher power, I was getting around it. I don't know how, I was getting around it. I wasn't getting around it. AA is a spiritual program. The spiritual side of the program. If I hear spiritual side of the program one more time, there is no spiritual side. It's a spiritual program. I was like, what? It really is. The whole thing is spiritual. It's unbelievable. If I was sitting there, I was new, I'd be like, ugh. I can relate. I dig it. It's okay. Just keep coming. And then in step 12, and then the 12th step is really, you're looking at it. I mean, somebody asked me, yeah, I love to speak. You kidding? I'm crazy. I love talking, but that's not it. I when I first came in, all I could do was make coffee. All I could do was share a little bit. All I could do, you know, was maybe put the chairs away at the end of the meeting or help clean up a little bit. And slowly over time, I started taking GSR. I started doing other service. I did intergroup for a little while. Not very long. I wasn't good at it. I'm sorry. God bless you, intergroup people and GSR service. Oh my God, that's amazing! You're incredible. I wasn't good at it. I do this. I'm better at sponsoring and stuff like that. I take guys through the steps now. I have a lot of sponsees. I got a sponsor. I got a home group. I work the steps. I'm doing all this stuff in my life. And life on life's terms today. It hasn't been easy. I'll tell you what. I was really like a big good riddance to 2008. Bye. I wasn't all that unexcited about it. The second wife in January decided that she didn't dig this new me, because I changed a lot in 5 years. I'm a very different person. As a matter of fact, she said to me, and I don't mean to condemn her or anything like that, maybe a little. I know. But this is a story. She said, she said, the most important thing in your life doesn't even register on my radar. We can't even relate. And I said, what do you think the most important thing in my life is? And she said, God. And I felt the tragedy in that. I felt the tragedy in that. And I still do. Those words echo in my head all the time, thinking, you know, I was in denial with that. She couldn't have a God in her life. She's got her own problems. And God did for me what I could never have done for myself right there. I would have never gotten out of that relationship on my own. And he put the conditions in that made it possible. And I immediately went into Alcoholics Anonymous, like, full steam. I picked up 4 new sponsees that summer. I started hitting meetings like crazy. I went right to Cape May for the roundup, which I get to play at now as a form of service. It's wonderful. I get to play down at the roundup. I get to play up at the GSR convention. That was great. I just got to do that up at Split Rock. It was absolutely wonderful. I get to do a lot of service back for the program. And this year, AA saved me. Saved my life. It saved my life 5 years ago. But now, I mean, here I am going through the worst pain of my life, the absolute worst pain of my life, and I'm going through it. I walked into meetings just bawling. I remember this was so mean. The lady came up to me, and she meant well. She goes, she knew. Everybody knew because I've been sharing. And I came in just in pain. She goes, what's the matter? And I said, nothing. I'm walking the walk. Leave me alone. Real ego, you know. But that was it. That is the truth, and that is walking the walk. And, you know, I love to talk. I can blah, 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 all you want, you know. But you have no idea what I do when I get in my car. You don't want to know. I'm terrible in traffic still. I'm working on it. I can seriously, my character defects can come back in a second. Walking the walk and carrying this message and practicing these principles in all my affairs, every one, is not easy. It's far from it. That's why I've got the 10th step where I can, when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it. But the amazing gift of Alcoholics Anonymous has been the ability to give it back. Just to be able to be a witness to the presence of God's life in somebody's life. I can't believe I'm talking like that. You know, I came into the rooms and I was dead spiritually inside. I was dead, and now I get to watch that. Now I get to stand here or come into a room and we watch dead people walk in those doors. Dead people walk in. And they come back to life. And that's not a metaphor, you know? That's the truth. That's exactly what happens. Somebody said that, I forget what it was. It was like, of the last century, the greatest contribution America has made, by far, I think it was Kurt Vonnegut, by far in the 20th century was Alcoholics Anonymous. The spiritual movement of Alcoholics Anonymous is ridiculous. I mean, it's just, 1935, 1934, it's like a blink of an eye, and there's millions of us now, everywhere. And to be just a small cog in that, and to watch some dead person walk in the door, bewildered, scared, terrified, no idea, just thinking, how did I get here? And looking at him and going, dude, you're going to love this. You're not going to believe it. This is an amazing way of life. You just hang on. It's absolutely incredible, and I know what you're thinking. You want me to blow up. I know. I know. It's okay. I do too. I know how you feel. It's because it's absolutely amazing. Because you come in, you're bitter, you're beat, you're done, and you got a whole room full of people who say, we love you, keep coming back. No matter what, you keep coming back, you know, those defiant bastards, we love you. Keep coming back, the ones that are just fighting it. I love those people. I love seeing people that just, it kills me. And slowly, every once in a while, you see one light up. I get a sponsee, and he's up there speaking. I'm like, oh my God, it's amazing. There's nothing like this program. I can't believe it. In the midst of the worst year of my life, I graduated from Holy Family with my master's in education. And this is all external stuff. This is the stuff that happens on the outside. And once the inside's all cleared up and God starts taking over, and I just keep going, yes, yes, I'll follow you. I'll do this. On the day before Christmas break, I said, the principal of the school that I student taught at, he said, you have to come back to the assembly. We do the student sing-along. You have to come back. And my third grade class is there, and I haven't seen him in like 2 weeks because now I'm subbing in the district. And He said, come on back, I got a costume for you. So I come in with my guitar, and we're going to do like a funky Disco Santa or something cheesy like that. And he goes, put this all on. So I get all dressed up, and I get this giant wig, right? So they can't see me. It's this humongous wig. So I'm like this, playing the whole time. And we finish, and I go in, and we all take a bow, and the wig comes flying off. And the kids go crazy. They go crazy. And I'll tell you, my dream was, rock star or bust. Right? That was my 20s. That was my plan. All drunk in my basement thinking I'm playing in Madison Square Garden. And it's beyond my wildest dreams. It literally is beyond my wildest dreams. That's insane. And it's not insane. It's insane. Before it was insane. This is an amazing way of life if you're new. Keep coming back. I want to thank everybody. Thank you, Tim. Thank you for having me. And this has been a great time. Enjoy the CD. Thanks.